February 1st, 2014, Christian Science Joint Institutions Committee meeting.
Because they know that many of them will go back in. We have the highest recidivism rate in the world at 67%. That means that almost 7 out of 10 people are going back into the system. So they're doing time in the system, doing time out of the system, waiting to get back into the system. Now, how do we break this vicious cycle? You, the work that you're doing, you are helping these people see that they're not having to do time. They can do eternity. By seeing that the spiritual truths that you're talking about relate to their identity, which is for all time, because they are spiritual, no beginning, no end. Before Abraham was, I am, Jesus said. That's eternity. And I learned a lot about that through a healing that I had, and I'd like to share that with you. In 1995, I was playing a rigorous game of basketball. I came down for a rebound, and I heard a snap in my ankle. And I prayed to know whether I should go the medical route, or perhaps I should just work this out in Christian Science. And so my inspiration told me, work it out in Christian Science. And so that's what I did. My ankle blew up to twice its size, and I was also a reader at the time, first reader. Our church had 2 services on Sunday, so I would put away the crutches and kind of hobble out there on the platform, and I'm so grateful for that Bible lesson sermon because it sustained me every time. But as was announced, my wife and I worked together, and she was being my legs, having to do all the architecture and real estate development work that we were doing, and she was having to be my legs away from the office there. And I was praying diligently, saying, Father, Mother, God, what do I need to know here? What do I need to know? And a thought came to me, are you willing to work this out in Christian Science, even if it takes eternity? I said, yes, I am. So I called my wife into the office, and I said, honey, are you willing to support me if I'm to work this challenge out in Christian Science, even if it takes eternity? Do you know what her answer was? She started laughing. and I started laughing, and then finally I said, what's so funny? And she said, I was wondering how long this is going to take. So was I. And so she said, yes, I will support you in Christian Science, even if it takes eternity. So with that, I felt like a huge weight had lifted off my shoulders. And you know, the next day, my ankle went down to its normal size. And that weekend, I was playing a vigorous game of tennis. No recuperation time. And isn't that just the way of Christian Science? We are spiritual. Compound idea of infinite spirit, the spiritual image and likeness of God, the full representation of mind. That's the definition of man in the glossary. So ideas, they don't take time to mend. Mrs. Eddy calls muscles thought forces. Well, same with bones or anything else. So these thought forces of mind are perfectly aligned. And it just makes sense. So what happened there? I had a huge lesson that eternity is not a long, long time. It's the absence of time. Mrs. Eddy says it this way. Thank you for the table, David. In Science and Health, under the question, what is life, on 468, in part it reads, eternity, not time, expresses the thought of life, and time is no part of eternity. One ceases in proportion as the other is recognized. Time is finite. Eternity is forever infinite. About a year and a half ago, I heard a daily lift, and I'm sure most of you are familiar with that. It comes from the Mother Church, 2-minute lecture. In fact, Meryl Walters is here, and she gives many wonderful daily lifts, and when yours comes up, I go, yes! So they're very good, and it's just such a gift to the world. In fact, it's won many awards. And so these lectures give the daily lifts, and it comes out via email, and you can get an app and put it on your phone or whatever device. And so I was listening to this daily lift, and it was on September 11th, 2012, and Michel Nanouche, who is a practitioner and teacher from Paris, France, gave this incredible lift that just was a paradigm shift. It just proved the nothingness of matter. And I want to set this up for you because I'm going to play it for you. But it's only 2 minutes, so you might miss some of the metaphysics if you're thinking about the logistics. So I'm going to set up the logistics for you. So here she is with a friend, and she's traveling on a mountain road, and it's one lane. And she's coming around a blind curve, and all of a sudden, she sees a bunch of sheep, and then a truck barreling down on her with no time or space to stop, and a violent collision about to happen. There's a mountain there, so she can't go that way, and then there's that one-lane road that she's on, and then a drop-off to nowhere, she says. So I'm going to pull this out here, and we'll play it. Now.
Today's daily lift is from Michel Nanouche. She's a Christian Science lecturer from Paris, France.
Driving with a friend on a one-lane passage between a stone cliff and a sheer drop-off to nowhere, we rounded a blind curve and saw a flock of sheep standing between us and an oncoming truck. We had nowhere to go, and no time to stop. I yelled out, God, and squeezed my eyes shut. Seconds later, checking the rearview mirror, I saw the sheep ambling calmly at the back of that truck, disappearing around the curve on the other side of them. I had justified time and space. Calling out God wasn't a curse or fear response. It was an affirmation of the presence and power of something larger than physics and fear. And the divine principle or law of love that is God responded, not by breaking a fixed physical law by some miracle, but by showing us that human perception isn't everything. God, the all-seeing, all-knowing mind, doesn't lose track of a single part of his creation. Creation is governed by love, and his children move in harmony with earth and each other. Understanding and acknowledging God as the divine principle of all, we become masters instead of servants of physics. If you find yourself in a bind and only have time or space for a one-word prayer, God is enough. And with God, enough is a whole powerful lot.
How powerful is that? So she rounded the corner, she saw the sheep, she saw the truck barreling down. No time or space, she said, except to say one word. God. And she said that wasn't a plea. It was an affirmation. And behind that one word were many hours, years, dedicated prayer that was going into that understanding. And what happened? Well, remember that definition of man that was in the glossary that I told you about? understood it at a real, practical level. And so the compound idea of man, and that other compound idea of man, and those simple ideas of sheep and vehicles, they're ideas. Everyone was able to pass in the same plane without violence. No violent collision. Now, the people that are incarcerated, there was a violent collision there, metaphorically speaking. Many of them feel like they have no time, no space, and that violence is inevitable. That's just the way it is. And so that occurs to others, and then wasting and destruction within their own lives, their drugs, or whatever problems. Why? Because there's not this understanding. Well, Michelle has proved that with this understanding, we can stop that cycle. And we don't have to go there. There doesn't have to be that violence. And this is what it says in Isaiah 60, verse 18. Violence shall no more be heard in thy land, wasting nor destruction within thy borders. But thou shalt call thy walls salvation, and thy gates praise. So the fear, ignorance, or sin that seems so powerful and so inevitable. No. No. It doesn't have to lead to violence. It doesn't have to lead to incarceration. There's a better way. And the way that you're showing them through these Bible lessons and through these individual meetings and through your prayer. And so unpacking this, violence shall no more be heard in thy land. They don't have to have violence in their community, in their home, in the jails. Wasting nor destruction within thy borders. Drugs don't have to be their god. They don't have to waste away. But thou shalt call thy walls salvation and thy gates praise. So instead of looking at these walls of the prison as keeping them in and from their freedom, they can look at these walls as protection, as salvation. Mrs. Eddy defines salvation, life, truth, and love, understood and demonstrated as supreme overall. Sin, sickness, and death destroyed. That's what's going on. So we can see these walls as a protection, as giving them the opportunity to work out the problem of being. After all, isn't that what Jesus was doing in the tomb, Mrs. Eddy said? And wasn't that large rock in front of that opening, wasn't that a protection for Jesus to work out the problem of being? Same with the guys in there. And call thy gates praise. That's huge. Those gates aren't keeping them from freedom. No. Those gates can be praised. It's giving them the opportunity to grow in grace and find out who they truly are as noble men of God. I'd like to share three instances of my work in California in a maximum security prison. The first story I'd like to tell you about is a man named Jimmy. Now, Jimmy had been coming to our services. We started out with just a handful of guys. And then we were going every week, and they began to trust us, and the guards began to listen to what we had to say. We were giving them literature, like you were talking about, David, meeting with the guards and getting to know them. Well, they were seeing transformation in their constituency within those inmates, and their job was becoming easier and more enlightened. And so they allowed us to start making the announcements. And then they started to allow us to go back into the different pods and actually see them through the bars, through the cells, and invite them to come to the Bible lesson service and to handout literature and talk and so forth. And this was really powerful. So we were having full houses within about a half year, and we did this for years. So there was a lot of continuity and trust built up there. So Jimmy had been in the service many times, and but never came up for a meeting afterwards, except this one day. He came and he said, "Gary, look at my leg," and he rolled up his pants, and it was very badly infected. And he said that the antibiotics aren't working. I'm off the meds. What can you do? I said, "Well, we can pray, and you can have healing." He said, "All right, that's good with me. What do I do?" So I gave him some citations, and we agreed to pray. And I said, "Please look away from your leg." And that, as you might remember from the definition of baptism, purification by spirit, submergence in spirit, willing rather to be absent from the body and present with the Lord. And that's what I wanted him to do, to be absent from the body and just present with the Lord. So he went on his way, I went on my way. I diligently prayed, and he did too. The next week he came back, and he was smiling. So I couldn't wait to meet with him after the service. And he came up and he goes, "Look at my leg." He pulled it up and it was healed completely. He said, "Thanks, man. But I want to thank you for something else." And I said, "What is that?" He said, "I was getting ready to do my buy. And they were able to get drugs freely in the prison system." He said, "I was ready to do my buy. And all of a sudden, I couldn't. I just couldn't. And I know why." So he said, "Thank you." And he said, "I pray that I can keep off that stuff." And I said, "Well, you did it 1 week and you had a nice healing. Just keep with that same consciousness and you can do it." I didn't see Jimmy after that. But he had his signs of health, and I trust that the good work that he felt from the services and reading signs of health and his own prayers and the little I did, I pray that that has planted a seed that will blossom forever. I did see one guy that blossomed pretty quickly, and his grin was so big that I thought maybe something was going on. I just didn't know what was up with him. His name was Jimmy, and I had never seen him before. And so after the service, I knew he was going to be bounded up, and sure enough, he was the first in line. And so we always pull off to the side and met him, and, "Hey, Jimmy, what's up, okay?" And he was still grinning. He goes, "You won't believe what happened to me." I said, what? He said, "Before you guys got here, about 2 hours before, I was laying in my bunk, and the thought came, look under the mattress. Look under the mattress." And he said, "You know, I didn't want to do that. I knew what was going to be under there, you know, all sorts of smut and porn. I just, you know, I didn't want to do that." But it kept coming, so finally, just to shut up the voice, I looked under the mattress, and I pulled out this magazine. Christian Science Sentinel. And I figured, because I got this message, I better read it. So I read it. The whole thing. And I'm thinking, man, this is something else. And then you guys come and announce. How great was that? It's like I was being prepared. And so when you said, "You want to come?" I was chomping at the bit. And he goes, "Okay, now, all right, what's the program?" He said, "What do you mean, what's the program?" He goes, "What's the program? What do we do now?" I said, "Well, how about this book?" And I had a paperback, Science and Health. I said, "How about this book? You saw me reading it. You want one of those? We give them out free." He goes, "Yeah, let me see it." So he opened it up, and I said, "Do you like to read?" He said, "Yeah." And I said, "Well, program, right? About how many pages do you that a day. He goes, Gary, all I got is time, man. I can do about 50 pages a day. I said, that's good. And if you do that, you'll finish this book in 2 weeks. He goes, right on. So, there was this program, and he marched out. I was really anxious to see the next week how far he had gotten. But he wasn't there. Okay? Next week, he wasn't there. So, I went up to the guard. I said, I mentioned Bobby, right? Or did I say Jimmy? It was Bobby. Bobby, where's Bobby? And they said, well, he's moved to another pod in another section of the prison that you don't have access to. Okay? So, I just, every time I thought of Bobby, I held a good thought knowing that he was on his program. And 2 months later, he came back. And he said, I stuck with the program. And I said, well, I think it's been about 2 months, so that means you've read Science and Health 4 times. Is that correct? He goes, right on! He's got about 6'8". And one time he said to me, after we met for a few times, he looked at me and he goes, you aren't afraid of me, are you? And I looked up at him and I said, no, Bobby, because you're my brother. So at any rate, getting back to the story. 4 times. He goes, Gary, am I doing okay? I said, Bobby, yeah, you're doing just fine. Just fine. He goes, I feel like a new man. I said, yeah, I can imagine that. And haven't we all read testimonies throughout the years of people that were incarcerated that had such a change of character that when they got engaged to be married or something, they had to show prison papers to their fiancé to show that, yes, they were in jail. But that was really no part of them. That was just a timeout, a long timeout, so that they could find this beautiful science. Well, I got elected reader, and as I mentioned, there were 2 services at our church. It was a large church in Westwood, California. And with those services and the extra duties that were required of the first reader there, and of course Wednesday, I decided to pass the baton to a young lady named Faith. And she was about 4'9" on a good day. And just a bundle of energy. And Faith is a great name for her because she had faith that moved mountains, and also a wonderful sense of understanding. But she wouldn't take any guff. She would take a guy like Bobby right by the nape of the neck and walk him out of that door if he was messing around in her service. And I saw that happen a few times. And so she was great. So no problem passing the baton to Faith. Well, a week before the Thanksgiving service, she gives me a call. She says, Gary, my second reader is not able to make it. So would you read with me on Thanksgiving after our church service? And I'm thinking, okay, Faith, 2 services on Sunday, 1 on Wednesday, 1 on Thursday, and Jim and I are hosting a Thanksgiving gathering at our house for about 20 people in the afternoon, and you're invited, and you're asking me to read with you, which is a 3-hour round trip. I found myself saying, sure, Faith, what did I do? And I was kicking myself all week. You know, I had forgotten this idea of eternity. Instead, I was wrapped up in that time thing that Rob was talking about. You got healed, though, didn't you, Rob? Yeah. So I had kind of forgotten that. And I'd forgotten the wonderful blessings that accrue from this great work. And so, Thursday came along, and the service at the church was wonderful, and then we were driving out to the facility, and I was still a little bit in my time mode, but when I got there, and And we got to the day room. They gave us a bigger day room, which is their chapel. And it was packed. Packed to the gills. I had to kind of squeeze in sideways to get in, and we had to clear some guys out to put our stuff down. It was really packed. And so they had to cut it off because they just had a limited space. So we must have had 80, 90 guys or something like that there. And it was a very holy atmosphere. They were really anxious to listen to this Bible lesson sermon. And I just felt the touch of the Christ. I kind of felt like maybe the apostles did at the Pentecost, where the descent of the Holy Ghost came upon them. Everybody heard each other in their own language, and 3,000 were brought into the Christian community, Christian church that day. Well, I kind of had a taste of that in that room. They were very attentive, and it was such a loving atmosphere. When it was over, we were kind of packing up to go. We weren't going to do a testimony portion. And then one guy said, may I say something? Sure, go ahead. He said, guys, we messed up. That's why we're here. These chaplains, they didn't mess up. They're here because today we are their family. I was already on a metaphysical high, but that was now an emotional high. And I started getting choked up, and that was really good. And other people were doing that too, and it was a very special moment. And then another guy pops up, and he starts talking about how grateful he is for the day, and what Christian Science has done for him, and it's like popcorn. All of a sudden, this is popping up. And that was a holy experience. And then finally, the guard comes by. All right, guys. Time to close it down now. They had another activity that they had to go to. And so we're thinking that that's kind of it. And then the guy says, do you mind if I sing Amazing Grace? Please go ahead. So he sang it so beautifully. He had a great voice. But you know, what made it even more special were all the voices that joined in. And that's how we ended the service. And I was thinking, well, I'm no Laurel LaPointe. But, you know, I did bring a guitar. And I know you have hymnal supplements. So why don't we try that ourselves? And it's page 431. And so we'll just play that. And we'll end with this beautiful hymn. And while you're getting your supplements, you probably know the story about John Newton. But he was kind of a bad boy. He was so bad, in fact, he made the captain's blush. And that's pretty hard to do on a sailor ship. He had such a foul mouth, and he even made up words to confound people. And sometimes they would chain him and withhold food from him. And he was just kind of a nasty spirit. And he was really into this slave trading in the mid-1700s. And then something happened. A big storm. You mentioned Jonah the whale. And you like to eat fish but not be eaten by fish? Well, he was thinking that that's what was happening to him. And it was an 11-hour stint that he had to be at the wheel. And he didn't know if they were going to be dead or alive. It was that precarious. And as they say, there are no atheists in foxholes. So when wartime hits, people get close to God. Well, he got close to God on those rough seas. And he thought, if I make it, I've got to live my life in a different way. And so what he did was, he actually left the slave trade, and he actually went into a seminary. And he learned, I don't know if it was a formal seminary at that time, but he studied Latin, preachers because he taught from his experience where a lot of these preachers had never done anything wrong in their life. They were talking from theory and he was talking from his heart. And it resonated and people came to him in droves. And he became quite a writer of hymns. And this is one of the most famous hymns of all time. And they say it's formally played about 10 million times a year, and probably a lot more than that. So let's do this. Let's sing this.
No need to stand. You can just sit there.
Thank you all for coming and thank you for your wonderful attention.